Good morning. It's time to read the Mason City Globe Gazette for today, Wednesday, December 11. I'm Adriana, and my partner at the microphone for the next hour is Luther. We're pleased to be with you. This broadcast is made possible through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. Here are today's headlines on the front page of the Globe Gazette. Mason City cost of living remains low. House Democrats unveil impeachment charges, and we all need to work together. And the weather, regional outlook is cold today with clouds giving way to sun. We can expect 4 to 8 hours of sunshine with average relative humidity at 70% and fair drying conditions. A little snow at times late tonight, accumulating up to an inch, and a chance of precipitation is 55% with an average relative humidity at 75%. Tomorrow will be mostly cloudy. So today will be cold. They don't predict the high to be much more than 13 degrees. So bundle up. Now with the first story, here's Luther.
Mason City cost of living remains low. The city is outpacing other Iowa towns. This article brought to us by Jared McNett of the Globe Gazette. There's something to be said for consistency. And yet another cost of living index report announced by the Mason City Chamber of Commerce and produced by the Council for Community and Economic Research, Mason City scored favorably while outpacing other cities in the state such as Dubuque and Ames. According to the quarterly report's findings, Mason City scored an 89.0, lower than Dubuque, which is 91.9, and Ames at 100.4. And out of Sioux Falls, we find theirs was 91.9, Lincoln, Nebraska, 93, Peoria, Illinois, 93.2, and St. Cloud, Minnesota, 100.3. The scores are calculated by finding prices for a representative sample of goods and services. Agencies then take into account how much of a person's budget would be consumed by them in a year. With the cost of living index report, groceries, health care, housing, transportation, miscellaneous goods, and utilities are the six measurements included. A score of 100 is the average, with anything above representing a higher cost of living and anything below meaning a more affordable cost of living. In announcing the report, Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Robin Anderson called Mason City good value and signaled lower housing and health care costs as drivers. Mason City consistently ranks as one of the most cost-effective places to live. In the last report, our transportation category seemed high, unusually high, but it appears that was a spike and not a trend, Anderson said. Mason City is 9 points behind Little Rock, Arkansas, which was listed as the least expensive among the 268 locales studied. An August report from MSN found that Mason City was the best place to live in Iowa on a $50,000 salary. For Mason City, total annual necessities was calculated at $27,136.16, leaving a remaining difference of $22,863.84. The story also mentioned that Mason City's average rent, about $700, was the lowest of any city on the list. Despite such affordability, meeting basic expenses remains a problem for almost 20% of Iowa households, according to the Iowa Policy Project's report. That number jumped from 100,000 in 2018, which occurred in part because more recent data was used in the analysis. In particular, the rent then rose about 3% from 2018. On the whole, families can earn an average of $8,000 to $17,000 less per year than what a basic needs income would provide, the report says. The Iowa Policy Project's data comes by putting together a household budget based on a very frugal living standards that includes expenses such as utilities, food prepared at home, child care, and transportation, but not items such as savings, loan payments, entertainment, or travel. Andrea?
We all need to work together. Lincoln Intermediate students collect 1,944 pounds of food. This article is written by Grace Zaplatinsky, and it's accompanied by a picture that shows students who helped fill the truck on November 22nd, and they are laying down in exhaustion after the hard work. Christmas time is the season for giving, not only to friends and families, but also for those in need. Lincoln Intermediate students helped to make sure no one will go hungry this Christmas. Students at the Mason City School held a food drive from November 13 to 21 throughout the school, resulting in a collection of 1,944 pounds of food and $219 in donations, all of which went to Hawkeye Harvest Food Bank. Each classroom had a box for students to put food in, and at the end of the week, each of these boxes were collected and put into a truck to transport to the food bank. It took two loads, fifth grader Riley Hollingsworth said. Mac and cheese, toothbrushes, and SpaghettiOs were some of the most popular items to bring in. Some food items sought were canned foods and non-perishables, though common toiletries such as toilet paper, toothpaste, and toothbrushes were also among the big items needed. Hawkeye Harvest Food Bank will distribute the food to various food pantries, soup kitchens, and schools in Mason City and the surrounding area. Maybe some people might not have enough, fifth grader Leah Garriott said. They might do this kind of thing too, but they might not have enough. So we could probably take some of our canned foods and deliver them so that they can have some food too, just so it's not just us in the Mason City area. Sixth grader Dalen Gensler said it's important to have food drives and donate to food banks because there are people in the area who can't afford basic needs that others can. Then when they need something, they have to either get it out of places they probably don't want to get food from or ask other people. And I feel like it's just good to have a food bank to give other people food, she said. Collecting food didn't just benefit the people who need it. It also provided a valuable learning experience for the students at Lincoln Intermediate. We all need to work together to accomplish things, Gensler said. Because a lot of food came in, Hollingsworth said she realized there are a lot of people who aren't as lucky as she is because her family has enough money to buy three meals a day, but others don't. They only have $5 in their pocket and they can't really buy a lot of things with that. And so they need so many people to help out with them, giving food to them, she said. To get more food, the school held a small competition between the classes and the winner received an ice cream party. Every year, the school holds two food drives this way, one for the holiday season called Cram the Corner, and another in April, each run by the Lincoln leaders, said Jeremy DeBattista, the school's behavior interventionist, who also runs the Lincoln leaders. We do the food drive so we can help out the needy and kind of fill the shelves, because I know towards the holiday season it kind of gets bare. It kind of gets low and rough for families who can't afford to supply big meals for their families during the big holidays, DeBattista said. So we always do the one right before Thanksgiving called Cram the Corner to help supply all that food and kind of help the food bank get enough food so families that feel like they need it can get it to help with their meal for Thanksgiving and Christmas. Luther?
House Democrats unveil impeachment charges, and this article comes from the Associated Press. And House Democrats announced two articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump on Tuesday, declaring his actions toward Ukraine betrayed the nation as they pushed toward historic proceedings that are certain to help define his presidency and shape the 2020 election. The specific charges aimed at removing the 45th president of the U.S., abuse of power, and construction and obstruction of Congress works. Speaker Nancy Pelosi, flanked by the chairman of the impeachment inquiry committees at the U.S. Capitol, and they were upholding their solemn oath to defend the Constitution. Trump responded angrily on Twitter, "Witch hunt." Voting is expected in a matter of days by the Judiciary Committee and by Christmas in the full House. The charges, if approved, would then be sent to the Senate, where the Republican majority would be unlikely to convict Trump, but not without a potentially bitter trial, just as voters in Iowa and other early presidential primary states begin making their choices. In the formal articles announced Tuesday, the Democrats said Trump enlisted a foreign power in corrupting the U.S. election process and endangered national security by asking Ukraine to investigate his political rivals, including Democrat Joe Biden, while withholding U.S. military aid as leverage. That benefited Russia over the U.S. as Americans' ally fought Russian aggression, the Democrats said. Trump then obstructed Congress by ordering current and former officials to defy House subpoenas for testimony and by blocking access to documents, the charges say. By his conduct, Trump demonstrated he will remain a threat to national security and the Constitution if allowed to remain in office, a 9-page impeachment resolution says. If we do not hold him accountable, he would continue to undermine our election, Pelosi said later at a forum sponsored by Politico. Nothing less is at stake than the central point of our democracy, a free and fair election. After decrying the Democrats' announcement, Trump headed to Pennsylvania for a re-election campaign rally. First, he tweeted that to impeach a president who has done nothing wrong is sheer political madness. The outcome, though, appears increasingly set as the House presses ahead toward impeachment, as it has only 3 times in the history against U.S. presidents, an ultimate test of the nation's system of checks and balances. Democrats said they had no choice but to act in what is now a strictly partisan undertaking, as Republicans stand with the president because Trump has shown a pattern of behavior that, if left unchecked, possesses risks to the democratic process. Representative Gerald Nadler, Democrat New York, the judiciary chairman, said the president holds the ultimate public trust. When he betrays that trust and puts himself before country, he endangers the Constitution, he endangers our democracy, he endangers our national security. No one, not even the president, is above the law, he said, announcing the charges before a portrait of George Washington. Chairman Adam Schiff of the Intelligence Committee said, "We stand here today because the president's abuse of power leaves us with no choice." White House Press Secretary Stephanie Grisham said Democrats are trying to overthrow the administration. Campaign manager Brad Parscale said that the Democrats don't have a viable candidate for 2020, and they know it. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said he would be totally surprised if there were 67 votes in the chamber to convict Trump, and signaled options for a swift trial. He said no decision had been made whether to call witnesses. Andrea?
Mary Cassatt, lithograph, comes home to McNider. This is written by Globe Gazette staff. The McNider Art Museum has purchased a lithograph by famed American artist Mary Cassatt, which once belonged to the McNider family. The piece was recently auctioned off during the sale of artwork and collectibles after the passing of Margaret McNider. The Museum Trustees and Acquisitions Committee, realizing the significance of the piece to the community as well as the provenance to the McNider family, made plans to purchase it earlier in the fall using donations set aside for the purchase of artworks. The piece was purchased in honor of Margaret, a lifelong museum supporter, and then it was brought to the museum for conservation analysis. The artwork was in excellent shape, but it needed reframing. It was reframed and matted using museum-safe archival techniques to preserve the artwork in perpetuity. Having just returned for the conservation work, this piece will be hung this week in time for the museum's annual holiday open house. It was fitting to unveil the piece to the collection at this time, said museum director Edith Blanchard. Margaret was an enormous supporter of the museum's annual holiday open house, both financially and also decorated the banister for many years with greenery. Visitors may view the piece during the regular open hours of the museum or at the museum's holiday open house events, which include McNider Off the Clock on Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. with beverages, hors d'oeuvres, and music provided by Sam Crosser. The museum will also feature holiday open house with Santa, many kids' crafts, book readings by Mayor Bill Schickel, as well as cookies and punch from 1 to 4 p.m. this Saturday. Both events are free to the public, thanks to the generosity of the McNider and Detmer family. Mary Cassatt is perhaps one of the most famous American female artists of all time, mastering paints, pastels, and printmaking techniques. She is considered to be one of the few American Impressionist painters, having traveled to Europe to study and work much of her adult life with Impressionist masters. The McNider Art Museum is free and open to the public Tuesday and Thursday from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. It is located at 303 2nd Street Southeast in Mason City, Iowa. More information about exhibits, programs, and events can be found at the museum's website at www.mcnider.org or at its Facebook page. You can also call this number for more information, 641-421-3666. I love that museum, and I plan to go this weekend. Luther?
Tuberculosis is diagnosed in the Hampton Dumont High School. This article brought to us by Jackie Smith of the Globe Gazette. Tuberculosis, a bacterial infection commonly thought to be an illness of the past, has been detected in Franklin County. On Monday, the Hampton Dumont School District issued a notice on its website that a student who was later diagnosed as having TB was in the high school. The Iowa Department of Public Health is working with Franklin County Public Health to create a list with whom the student became in contact so that they can also be tested, said Ashley Roberts, Franklin County Public Health Administrator. TB is an airborne pathogen transmitted through coughing, talking, and sneezing. Individuals stricken with the illness will most likely experience a cough that lasts 3 weeks or longer, pain in the chest, and cough up sputum, then or blood. A fever can also be present. The illness is treated with antibiotics. A vaccine for TB is generally not recommended. Franklin County Public Health will work with the Iowa Department of Public Health to set up a clinic to perform blood tests, Roberts said, but no official date has been set yet for this event. TB testing and treatment is free through the Iowa Department of Public Health. A representative of the Iowa DPH declined comment on the clinic on Tuesday afternoon. Franklin County has had only one other documented case of TB between 2008 and 2017, according to state health records. Over the same time frame, Iowa has averaged about 46 cases of TB annually, down markedly from the 600 to 700 cases diagnosed in the 1930s and 40s, according to the Iowa Department of Public Health. Andrea?
St. Paul man who led chase to Worth County gets probation. This is written by Sarah Stoltz for the Albert Lee Tribune. The St. Paul man who led authorities on a high-speed chase from Albert Lee to Worth County that ended in an officer firing his weapon was sentenced on Monday to 5 years of probation. 10 years of prison time and a $1,000 fine were suspended. Ryan Amabile, age 30, had pleaded guilty on October 28 to one count of first-degree theft as part of a plea deal to have his two other charges of eluding and second-degree robbery be dismissed at sentencing. During the course of the chase, which exceeded 100 miles per hour, he reportedly struck at least two cars, displayed a handgun, and attempted to carjack a 2016 Chevrolet Malibu in Worth County, driven by a Northwood woman. Freeborn County Sheriff's Office Deputy David Gilmore fired three rounds through his patrol car windshield to stop the carjacking. And at that time, Amabile went down to the ground and was taken into custody. He was found to have several felony warrants out of Minnesota and was driving a vehicle with fraudulent license plates that was stolen from St. Louis Park. Iowa DCI Special Agent Chris Calloway said there were no concerns about Gilmore's use of force, and the case remains under investigation regarding Amabile's actions in Minnesota. Freeborn County Attorney David Walker said charges in Minnesota are under review through the county attorney's office. Luther?
Sanders warns of perilous moment in American history in this article brought to us by Amy Rivers in a special to the Globe Gazette. Out of Iowa Falls, then, sounding at times more like the host of a talk show than a presidential candidate giving a stump speech, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders posed a question to the crowd. Who wanted to talk about the stress in their lives? Several in the crowd of 170 did, by taking the microphone to tell heartbreaking stories of stress caused mental illnesses, addiction, and hopelessness. Is the economy doing great when you have the richest country in the world and half of our people are working paycheck to paycheck? Sanderson asked. I grew up living paycheck to paycheck, and what wealthy people don't understand is if your car breaks down, it's a family emergency. Sanderson, who spoke Saturday morning at Ellsworth Community College in Iowa Falls, said half of the workers in this country were paycheck to paycheck, unable to afford an unexpected expense. We don't talk about it as a nation, but millions of people are feeling that stress, he said, adding that for those people, life expectancy was going down. All we are saying is that we want a government and an economy that works for the working people, not just 1%. I don't think that is a radical idea. Calling health care a human right, Sanders also spoke about his Medicare for All plan, a staggered four-year plan which he would pay for with a 4% tax on income over the first $29,000. For a person making $60,000, he said that amounted to around $1,200 per year, far less than most people currently pay through the Affordable Care Act or their employer's plan. So when you see the ads, Bernie Sanders wants to raise your taxes, sure. But Bernie Sanders wants to get rid of the copays, the premiums you pay, and the deductibles, he said. I think paying $1,200 is a lot better than paying $12,000. His plan to get rid of all student loan debt, he said, could be accomplished with a modest tax on Wall Street speculation. While his Green New Deal would bring 20 million new jobs. I wish I could come before you today and say things have gone pretty well. We just need a little tinker here and there. If I told you that, I would be lying, Sanders said. This is a perilous moment in American history. Kelly Gurley of Mason City said she stopped by the Iowa Falls event on the way to Des Moines and was happy with what she had heard. Bernie's the main one, she said, of her top candidates. He stands for health care for all, which is important to me, and for the Green New Deal, which is also important to me. He's also for protecting the working class. Danny Reynoldson of Iowa Falls said he went to see former Vice President Joe Biden speak recently and left unimpressed. I like him, but I don't think anything's going to change with him, Reynoldson said of Biden. Sure, I think it's Bernie. He said what he liked it the best was Sanders' Medicare for All plan. I can't even afford my teeth anymore. My savings are gone, Reynoldson said, noting his current Medicare plan was costing him too much. Healthcare is ridiculous. But the biggest motivator, he said, was the current president. That Trump, he's a complete disgrace. We've got to get him out, he said. Sanders is polling in second at about an average of 18.3% among likely Iowa Democratic caucus scores, according to Real Clear Politics. That's behind South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, polling at an average of 24%, and just ahead of Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren at 7.7%, and then Biden coming in at 16.3%. It's down for April, when Sanders was at 24.5%, one of the two candidates with name recognition here. But it's also 6 points up from September, when Sanders had dropped to a low of 12%. The rest of the field is polling on an average of 6% or less, led by Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar at 5.3%. The last Iowa-specific poll was taken on the 19th of November. Sanders then also held a private forum in Cedar Rapids for Teamsters members, followed by an open rally at Harding Middle School in Cedar Rapids at 6 p.m., both of them on Saturday. He planned a noon town hall at Simpson College in Indianola on Sunday. Eddie?
Well, let's continue with a little bit more politics. Pardon me. Delaney calls for trade deals to reinvigorate rural America. This is written by James Q. Lynch as a special to the Globe Gazette, and it's Dateline in Grinnell. It might be easy to dismiss John Delaney as another big city East Coast politician, but the former Maryland congressman claims some serious rural bona fides. Not only was his father-in-law an Idaho potato farmer, but Delaney represented the most rural congressional district in Maryland. And actually, agriculture is the number one industry in our state, he recently told the Iowa Farmers Union annual convention in Grinnell. So Delaney had personal insight on rural issues even before he spent the last couple of years in Iowa campaigning for the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination. I think I'm the only candidate really focusing on the issues that matter to rural America, he said before speaking to the farmers group. I've been to all 99 counties. No one else has done that. I'm talking about things that actually matter, like getting back in the Trans-Pacific Partnership or having a real agenda to encourage entrepreneurship in rural America. Delaney claims to be the only Democrat running who supports the TPP, which is the 12-nation deal with countries such as Japan, Australia, and Chile. That was negotiated by the Obama administration to create a counterweight against China. About half are opposed to it, while some want to renegotiate it and others haven't weighed in. Regardless of their positions, Delaney said that for the most part, his rivals are complaining about what President Donald Trump's doing, but not putting forth any real proposals. He's not shy about endorsing the TPP, which he said has the highest labor and environmental standards of any trade agreement. An added benefit for American farmers is that it would increase the value of farmland, Delaney said. Supporting TPP and the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, which Delaney also endorses, would be good for the Democratic Party, he said. I think it's good for our party because it's a way for us to make inroads into communities that we've lost, he said. If you want to beat Donald Trump, which everyone I know does, the best way to take him on is with an alternative vision around agriculture that has to start with embracing the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Also, if Trump and the GOP have become the party of building physical walls to keep out immigrants, Delaney said, the Democratic Party can't be the party of economic walls to keep trade out. His plan for reinvigorating rural America doesn't stop with trade. Delaney is calling for investment in rural America because nothing happens without investment. Since 1990, the nation has grown by 75 million people, but rural America has shrunk by 3 million. In the last 5 years, counties with more than a million people have created 100,000 new businesses, but counties of fewer than 100,000 people have lost 25,000 businesses. Last year, 80% of the money and startup companies went to 15 counties in this country. This is an enormous problem. Huge parts of our country have been left behind economically, Delaney said. It's terrible for those communities. It creates no opportunities for young people, and it destabilizes our democracy because our democracy is premised on the notion that we have broad-based economic prosperity. His solution is to reignite entrepreneurship and small businesses in rural America. Delaney would prime the pump with a huge national infrastructure plan with a disproportionate allocation to rural America. He would require that 25% of government contracts go to firms that have half their employees and communities that are struggling economically. Delaney would double the earned income tax credit in those communities to make it easier for employers to hire workers. Taken together, Delaney said, you know, these are real strategies that bring investment dollars into these communities. Luther?
Okay, it's 8:30, but we want you to know today that we don't have any remembrances or obituaries in the paper today. So we'll continue marching forward here with our opinion page. In our editorials, then, we have one by Tim Ackerman of Miller, and it's an argument against term limits, a plea for milk cartons. She's a short timer. He's a lame duck. She's already got one foot out the door. He's counting the days until retirement. Such descriptions of someone soon to leave an organization are generally derogatory. The implication is that those whose days in a position are numbered may have diminished effort as the departure approaches. While this is not always true, in many cases it's an accurate assessment. Democratic presidential candidate Tim Steyer is the latest high-profile advocate for imposing term limits on members of Congress. Supporters, believing so, would help reduce the influence of money and special interests in politics while making politicians more accountable to the voters. Tim says, I'm not convinced. While it's true incumbents often have a collection of wealthy donors and influential backers, they also have name recognition and a voting record that they can run on or from, and opponents can attack the voters and can scrutinize. Political newcomers are quite often relative unknown, but as such, then, they arguably must campaign harder and advertise more, thus having a greater need to woo powerful interests and attract well-heeled backers. Knowing their time in Congress will be fixed, they may well be more inclined to make promises they cannot or will not keep simply to get elected. Some, in their final term, may be looking to parlay their public service into a private sector opportunity, while those inclined to outright corruption might assume they'll be elsewhere before their misdeeds are discovered. While it's uncertain what, if anything, would be gained by instituting term limits, it is clear what would be lost. The benefits of experience, continuity, and seniority, as well as the right of the people to decide for themselves who they want to send to Washington and for how long. If voters are unhappy with their representation, they can impose term limits by electing a new congressman every 2 years and a new senator every six. But to paraphrase from the healthcare debate, if you like your current representative and senator, you should be able to keep them. In 2010, 63% of Iowans who voted approved a constitutional amendment to create the Natural Resources and Outdoor Recreation Trust Fund. While this established the trust, the Iowa legislature must raise the state sales tax by at least 0.375 to begin the flow of revenue. After nearly a decade, it seems there may be interest, even among Republican leaders, in approving that funding. But it seems there's always a but. Before the amendment was presented to voters, it had to be approved by two consecutive Iowa General Assemblies. During this process, the legislature passed enabling legislation, including a formal stipulating how the money would be used. Voters were told this is what they were considering when the amendment was passed back in 2010. Now, some Republicans would like to see the formula revised to reflect changing priorities. Public opinion polls and discussions among conservation advocates, however, indicate most people's priorities have not changed all that much. What also hasn't changed is the fact that some conservative Republicans and certain interests within the ag sector are suspicious of public land ownership in general and opposed to recreational trails in particular. These groups would like to see funds earmarked for public recreation reduced or eliminated in favor of other elements more directly addressing water quality. Iowa desperately needs to improve its water quality, and all Iowans would benefit from doing so. A such change to the formula stipulating the public land acquisition and improvements should be targeted towards enhancing water quality that would be reasonable. Unreasonable would be eliminating or substantially reducing the public recreation components of the formula in favor of funding for conservation initiatives taking place solely on private land. Any changes to the formula should be made in the open and with considerable public input, so Iowans are given what they agreed to pay for in 2010. In a recent examination of the struggling dairy industry, syndicated columnist Alan Gubert noted dairy milk consumption is falling, while sales of non-dairy milk substitutes increased 61% in the time span from 2013 to 2017. I'm among those who have been purchasing some milk made from almonds rather than by Holsteins, but for what I suspect is a somewhat atypical reason. When I was a youngster, my father's grandfather and cousin raised chickens on their farm south of Ventura. Extended family and many friends would gather periodically to process the birds for our own consumption. Everyone saved their half-gallon cardboard milk cartons in which to package and freeze the poultry. While our tribe hasn't done chickens for decades, I still freeze ducks, pheasants, and miscellaneous other critters or parts thereof in those cartons. Yet, regular dairy milk is now seldom offered in cardboard half gallons. I'm not a big juice drinker, and organic dairy milk is pretty pricey, so the almond stuff is the most economical option for getting my carton fix. Not sure if there are enough hunters or nostalgics out there to create a market for reasonably priced dairy milk in cardboard cartons, but I sure wish someone to give it a try. And yeah.
There's another article entitled Calendar Celebrates Iowa Women. This is written by Steve Corbin, who is an emeritus professor of marketing at the University of Northern Iowa. While my pencil or crayon drawing expressions can best be described as stick figure art, if that, I marvel at artists whose creations speak to my soul and touch my stream of consciousness. I'm struck with awe and wonder while studying Gary Kelly's limited edition 19th Amendment Centennial Commemorative Calendar for 2020. The 100-year anniversary of ratification of the 19th Amendment, women's right to vote, will be commemorated throughout America in 2020. Veridian Credit Union viewed this as a monumental achievement that merits attention, education, and promotion. Veridian Credit Union commissioned Kelly, elected to the Society of Illustrators Hall of Fame in 2007, to create 12 illustrations for the 2020 calendar without restrictions. The calendar, titled Hard Won, Not Done, depicts Iowa natives who made a lasting mark on society. The January calendar. Elizabeth Catlett from 1915 to 2012 in Iowa City, a granddaughter of slaves and a University of Iowa graduate who studied under the iconic artist Grant Wood, became the first African-American woman to earn a Master of Fine Arts degree in the United States. During February, Edna Griffin, who lived from 1909 to 2000 and lived in Des Moines, referred to as the Rosa Parks of Iowa, she took her stand at Katz Drugstore in Des Moines 7 years before Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat on an Alabama bus. Griffin's action brought civil rights to Iowa. Featured in the March calendar, Arabella Bell Mansfield, who lived from 1846 to 1911 in Mount Pleasant, is an Iowa Wesleyan graduate who challenged women not being permitted to take the bar exam, and in 1869 became the first female lawyer in America. Iowa became the first state to admit women to the practice of law. I didn't know that. In the month of April, Sioux City-born twin sisters Esther Eppy and Pauline Esther Popo Friedman, who lived from 1918 until 2002, and then Pauline lived from 1918 until 2013, were Morningside College graduates, and they became progressive national advice columnists, Ask Ann Landers and Dear Abby. In May, Sister Corita Kent, who lived from 1918 to 1986 in Fort Dodge, was a pop art icon who used her art to spread messages of love, peace, and equality, and alert the public to various humanitarian crises. In June, Willie Stevenson Glanton, from 1922 to 2017 in Des Moines, became the first woman to be named Assistant Polk County Attorney, Iowa's first African-American female legislator and civil rights and women's rights attorney with U.S. Small Business Administration. Now we're up to July. Doreen Wilbur, who lived from 1930 to 2008 in Jefferson, became the first Iowa woman to bring home a gold medal, and it was in archery in 1972 at Summer Olympics in Munich, Germany. During August, we will celebrate Jesse Field Shambaugh, who lived from 1881 to 1971. In Shenandoah. She created after-school programs in 1901 for young people in Page County, for which she became known as the mother of 4-H clubs. The month of September, the seven brothers from McGregor, 1852 to 1918, who formed the Ringling Brothers, were, as Kelly noted, ahead of the curve when it came to equal rights. Female performers' salary were comparable to and sometimes exceeded their male counterparts. The month of October, Jean Adeline Morgan Wanity from 1910 to 1996 in Tama became the first woman to be elected to the Meskwaki Tribal Council, Smithsonian Institute language specialist and first American Indian inducted into the Iowa Women's Hall of Fame. In November, Carrie Chapman Catt, from 1859 to 1947 in Charles City, graduated from Iowa State University, the only female in her class. She was active in the suffrage movement and founded the League of Women Voters in 1920. And finally, in December, Donna Mel Mullinger, AKA Donna Reed, from 1921 to 1986 in Denison, received a Best Supporting Actress Oscar for her appearance in From Here to Eternity and starred in the television series The Donna Reed Show. Gary Kelly's inspirational and educational 2020 calendar is a masterpiece. Kelly's history-rich creations appear to be of a humanities professor disguised as a robust and sophisticated illustrator. Extensive biographies of historic Iowans written by Emmy Award-winning Sidney Kelly are included in the calendar. The limited edition calendar can be obtained free while it's available at any of Veridian Credit Union's 27 Iowa office locations. Well, I'd like to have that.
Okay, yes. Looking right now at our letters to the editor for today, We have United Way Goal a long way off yet, asking for help, and this was submitted by Gary Wadham of Mason City. As we pause then to give thanks at this time of year, I am awed at the generosity of North Central Iowa and the willingness to make our communities better for everyone. You have stepped up like a champion when your United Way has asked, and your support, whether it was through workplace campaigns, individual giving, or annual events such as the Day of Caring, your donations are vital to the success of the current campaign. Your support helps United Way of North Central Iowa fight for children and adults alike in providing needed assistance and stability in every community throughout our 8-county region. This year, your support will help ensure that the children and adults in need will receive assistance in education, income management, and health programs, to mention a few. This assistance specifically targets childhood and adult success, economic mobility, and access to health programs. It will help lift people to long-term financial stability and provide them with the support they need today. Your donation funds more than 20 agencies in the North Iowa region. We still have quite a bit to raise to hit our goal of $826,000. I hope you will visit https://www.unitedwayNCI.org to learn more about the great happening in this region and there to make your donation. Thanks again for your generosity, and please invest in the North Iowa region through United Way and make an impact and long-term change for the better.
Journalists should know better. This letter is written by Claudia Tillman from Forest City. My husband and I, both retired teachers, don't regularly get the Globe Gazette, but we picked one up on Thanksgiving so that we could see the special ads. On the front page was an interesting article about a family who raises turkeys. What first caught my attention about the article, however, was the glaring error in large letters in the title. Quote, Helfters, no turkey, unquote. There should not have been an apostrophe in that word, Helfters. It should have been Helfters without the apostrophe. Imagine my surprise to see the same error two more times in the same article. Perhaps your regular proofreaders were on vacation, but every journalist should be well aware of the correct usage of grammar and punctuation in every article that they write. And the last letter to the editor is, donation to United Way helps Mitchell County youth. This is written by Lacey Waller, a Bridges Mentoring Program coordinator. The Bridges Mentoring Program is entering its 21st year of providing mentoring services to youth in Mitchell County. Our mission is to strengthen the self-esteem and social skills of children and youth by providing positive mentoring relationships at no cost to the families. We serve children in the Riceville, St. Ansgar, and Osage school districts. Through mentoring, youth have increased self-confidence, improved relationships in their school and community, be exposed to new experiences while giving parents an increased positive support system. Mentors can play a strong role in shaping who our children become, how they connect to their world, and their educational and personal success. A once-a-week interaction can become a lifelong friendship. For the last 12 years, the Bridges Mentoring Program has been supported by our caring community through support of our fundraisers and through donations to United Way. Being able to request funds from the United Way to help offset our tight budget is simply amazing and vital to the sustainability of our program. It definitely takes a village to keep our programs alive, and United Way is an essential member of that village. Please consider making a donation, personally or through workplace giving, to United Way so they can continue to support our essential organization. Also, consider mentoring. You don't need special skills to serve as a role model and make a lasting impression. just a positive outlook and a willingness to interact. A good place to start is with Bridges Mentoring Program. The impact you have can make a world of difference in the life of a child. Luther?
Okay, taking a look now at our sports for today, Wednesday, November 11th. We got two main articles here. Clear Lake sweeps Mason City in thrillers, and Jones adds an old school baller for Iowa State. Our first story then, brought to us by Dave Bravala of the Globe Gazette. Mason City sweeps in thrillers. Got a four-column picture across the top here of Clear Lake's Andrew Formerdeck drives to the basket in the first half of the Lions boys basketball game at Mason City on Monday. Clear Lake boys basketball coach Jeremy Inley learned something important about his Lions team on Monday. Mason City built a 16-point advantage over the Lions midway through the third quarter and was on the verge of putting Clear Lake away, but the Lions stormed back with a 29-10 run over the final 12 minutes to pull out an improbable 67-64 win. "We talked about the heart at halftime," Ainley said. "We told them to play as hard as they can." For much of the game, the taller Lions were stymied by a smaller, quicker Mason City lineup that forced 16 turnovers through the first three quarters. The Mohawks then took a 6-point lead into the intermission and opened the third quarter with a 16-6 run. But then the shots stopped falling, and for Clear Lake, the inside game took over. Andrew Formanek, the Lions' 6'6" junior forward, took over inside against a Mason City team with no player taller than 6'3". Formanek then finished with 27 points on 12 of 18 shooting from the floor, including 14 points in the Lions rally. "I knew I was taking on a bigger role this year," Formanek said. "I just trust my teammates and my game." Formanek averaged 7.4 points per game a season ago. Jack Barragay also came up big for the Lions with a trio of second-half three-pointers and 13 total points. Carson Trobe then added 11. While the Clear Lake defense was key in the second half, the Mohawks hurt themselves by missing 9 free throws in the second half. Jeff Scogan and Corey Minear combined for 40 points for Mason City. Austin Richardson added 9. "And so far then, we have been outsized at every position in each game," Mason City coach Nick Trask said. "The guys played tough, but tonight we found out a few of our weaknesses." Clear Lake then, with a 3-1 record, travels to Iowa Falls Alden on Friday as it returns to the North Central Conference play. Mason City, with 2 wins, 1 loss, is at West Des Moines on Friday. Now taking a look at girls basketball. Score ended up being Clear Lake 71, Mason City 64. Despite some strong teams over the past 3 seasons, one thorn for the Clear Lake girls basketball team has been Mason City. The Lions, who started this season with 3 wins, no losses, were 60 win, 12 losses over the last 3 years, but 3 of those losses were to the Mohawks. On Monday, the two teams played another close game in their annual battle, and after a pair of Onadit's free throws with less than a minute remaining gave the Mohawks a 1-point lead. It looked like a Clear Lake win would again prove elusive. The Lions, though, responded with the final 8 points of the contest to pull out a 71-64 win against the previously unbeaten Mohawks. "What I liked was how the girls responded," Clear Lake coach Bart Smith said. "We finished well." As a team known for its defense, the Lions then proved to be particularly efficient at the offensive end. Sarah Faber scored 18 of her team-high 26 points in her second half that saw her go 5 for 7 from the floor. Sharpshooting guard Darby Dodd was 6-for-8 on three-point shots and finished with 22 total points. Lions then were also 23-of-27 from the free throw line, with both Faber and Dodd nailing 4 apiece in the waning seconds. "We are almost there," Faber said. "This year, it seems like we have all the pieces." For the Mohawks, it was a tough loss after fighting back from a 12-point third-quarter deficit to take a brief lead. Clear Lake's defense limited the Mohawks to just 25% shooting in the fourth quarter. "Give all sorts of credit to Clear Lake. They earned the win," Mohawks coach Kurt Klassen said. "But this was really a good game for both of us. It will be about what we do from here." Anadits then poured in 29 points, including 22 in the second half, to pace the Mohawks. Jada Wither added 9 and Allie Rood 8. Clear Lake, with a 4-win, 0-loss record, returns to conference action on Friday when it travels to Iowa Falls Alden. Mason City, with a 4-win, 1-loss record, heads to West Des Moines Valley on Friday. Out of girls bowling then, we find that the Mason City girls bowling team came out on top in its match against Waukee on Monday at Mystic Lanes as the Mohawks beat the Warriors 2,221 to 2,145. Erin Lacey shot a 177 and 134 in her two games for a combined score of 311. Adriana Ott had the best overall day for the Mohawks, shooting a 176 and a 148 for a combined score of 324. Out of boys bowling then, we find the Mason City bowling team put a solid performance but lost to Waukee at Mystic Lanes on Monday night as the Mohawks fell to the Warriors 2,921 to 2,754. Aaron Pope came away with the high team for Mason City, bowling a 224. Nathan Fresquez was second with a score of 203. Iris and Quade had a two-game series high with a score of 393, while Andrew White put up a 379. The Mohawks, they will bowl again on December 19th against Marshalltown.
That's nice to give credit to some of the lesser familiar sports activities. Yep. There's one last local article. Nyack basketball named NJCAA NABA Team of the Week. This is written by Shane Lance for the Globe Gazette and is accompanied by a small picture that shows North Iowa Area Community College sophomore Wendell Matthews. He is setting up under the basket for a shot against Central Community College on December 1st in Mason City. Off to its hottest start in years, the number one NIAC basketball team has started to earn the attention of the national basketball community. On Tuesday, the team was named the National Association of Basketball Coaches Team of the Week in the NJCAA division. NIAC earned the honor after scoring a 98-68 win at Southwestern Community College last Wednesday. The win also put the Trojans atop the NJCAA Division II standings for the first time since 1978. The Trojans were one of five collegiate teams to receive the Team of the Week honor. Ohio State was named the Division I Team of the Week, with Dallas Baptist winning the award in Division II. In Division III, Worcester won the honor after beating undefeated Wabash, and Indiana Tech was Team of the Week in the NAIA. NIAC will travel to Overland Park, Kansas, where the Trojans will play at Johnson County Community College on Friday. Luther?
That brings us to the end of the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for this Wednesday, the 11th of December. Your readers this morning have Adriana and Luther. This broadcast has come to you through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of IRIS or KCMR. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for today's reading of the Des Moines Register. You're listening to IRIS, your 24-hour radio reading service. Have a great day.